From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis, sometimes insight into the media issues of the week. We will have a program today and what we may look back upon as being a seminal week in the history of American media. We'll get to that in a moment. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Kaylin Brown, a professor of communication at the College of St. Rose.
Hello,
wonderful
Rex.
To see you. Communications.
Indeed.
Indeed. And Dr. Ellen Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Professor.
Yo, Rex.
Yo, Rex. Yo, Alan. Alan is speaking from his home studio in the Berkshires, and that's a good thing to have him. I'll tell you why I'm saying this is perhaps a seminal week, and it is a very serious matter. We have a president of the United States, and this is the first time, to my knowledge, in American history, when a president has suggested that he does not fully support the oath of office that he took. His oath on January the 20th was to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. The president suggested that perhaps the media shouldn't be allowed to say whatever it wants. At what point is it appropriate, he says, to challenge their license? This has to do with NBC News. He said this aloud while he was meeting with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. It's frankly disgusting the way the press is able to write whatever they want to write, and people should look into it. This is unprecedented. We have never had a president who has said that we should abrogate the freedom of expression that is guaranteed by the First Amendment to every citizen, including citizens who work for NBC News or citizens who work for WAMC or the Times Union or citizens walking on the street. This may go down as a moment when the United States definitely began its slide into authoritarian rule and dictatorship.
Well, you know, Rex, I agree with you, and I've been saying from the very beginning I was scared to death about totalitarianism and about where this guy was leading us and what he intended to do. Remember, he didn't get the most votes. He won the Electoral College, but he did not get the most votes. Hillary Clinton did that. And yet, we are talking about a posture here that reminds me a little bit of, how can I say it? Benito Mussolini.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. And now, to be clear, it's an empty threat in a sense that the Federal Communications Commission does not license networks. The FCC licenses broadcast enterprises, stations that carry this. The FCC is an independent agency that while its members are appointed by the president, he doesn't remove them. They're not under his thumb the way, say, a cabinet department would be. Nevertheless, it is a terrifying notion when the president of the United States says that he believes that the license of one of the major broadcast networks ought to be pulled.
And the impetus for his anger is the fact that the news unearthed the reality that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson had characterized the president as an, I can't say it on the air, but I can say the F word that way, mm-hmm. Moron. Yeah. And so the fact that Tillerson has been attributed by the media with saying that about the president is what set the president off.
Well, of course, truth is an absolute defense against libel. So
exactly right.
I never like to criticize Rex because he's almost always right.
Which Rex? The Rex Tillerson?
You.
Oh, okay.
Because you're almost right, but you weren't right in something you said before.
What's that?
You were half right. And that's because it is true that the FCC does not regulate the parent company, the National Broadcasting Company, but the National Broadcasting Company owns several stations.
Correct.
Of their own.
Yep.
And that's where he could make a difference.
Each of those has its own license.
That's right.
Right. If he could convince the FCC to abrogate its constitutional responsibility, you know, it is possible. Now, in my estimation, this is a matter that I'm willing to go to war over. I think that this is worth a civil war, quite frankly. I don't know how else to say this. This is every bit as serious a matter as slavery in these states, which gave us our last civil war. And if we truly have a president who is willing to take away the rights of American citizens to speak their minds, to say what they wish, that is the fundamental freedom upon which this country is based. And it suggests either that we need to remove the man from office, or I don't know what. I don't know what. Here, let me just read you some more words that he said. The press should speak more honestly. I mean, I've seen tremendously dishonest press. It's not even a question of distortion. And then they have their sources that don't exist. In my opinion, they don't exist. They make up the sources. There are no sources. So, you know, maybe he doesn't like the stories. Of course, the fact of the matter is we have seen over and over and over again the president lying, the press telling the truth, and what he does is he challenges and attacks the press for reporting the truth. It's entirely possible, I guess, isn't it, that NBC was wrong in the story about the Secretary of State saying that the president is an effing moron. But I should point out that the Secretary of State didn't deny saying that.
He sent somebody else out to deny it. But you know, Rex, here we are at public radio and a public radio station. And as we record this, we're about to go into a fund drive. I have to say, I've never seen anything like it. It used to take us a week, sometimes more than a week, to make $1 million. The last two drives, it's taken a day. And this is reaction, I'm telling you now, to this president and what he is saying. And I do think people are voting all around the country who are listening to this program. I think people are voting with their dollars to say, we affirm the idea of a free press.
It's also clear by the way the media is taking its job seriously, which it has historically done, that it is going to continue to forge forward and will continue to unearth and reveal the truth concerning this administration, as well as the truth at the local government level. And in the various stories it does, we are learning in the past week about stories that have been reported out over months, because the reporters are not going to give up when they hear no, and they're going to continue to find other ways to collect the information they need to keep citizens informed. So I think the media will be emboldened by this. I think we will continue to encourage in our classrooms students to become journalists and to understand how journalism operates, and that media organizations will forge forward as they have always done.
You know, I've been reading the New York Times. I read it three times during the night. They're doing a terrific job. But I'm fascinated by the corrections at the end of every story. If they made the smallest mistake, especially in one of the Donald Trump stories, they'll correct it, and fast.
Absolutely.
Because they know the downside of having done something that wasn't correct is.
Well, they know that's their obligation. That is a point of pride to correct an error. That's not something that's looked at as problematic. It is a problem to make a mistake in journalism, as accuracy is one of the pillars of journalism. But still, journalists recognize, I am a human being and I am bound to make a mistake. And if it is presented to the reporter or the editor that a mistake has been made, it is our obligation to correct that. And we would take full responsibility to do that.
Absolutely. You know, we're not reluctant. In fact, this was an interesting issue among editors some years ago, when it was just, sort of a trend to question our corrections policies, to see what ways are we doing it right, what ways are we doing it wrong at the dawn of the internet age. And one of the issues was, do you ever punish a reporter for being non-factual? If you have a reporter who has a problem with accuracy, what's the right thing to do about it? You don't want to fail to make corrections. And sometimes if a reporter thinks they're going to get into trouble for making a mistake, they're not going to report errors in their own stories. So you want to encourage people to report their errors. You want to publish corrections prominently. And now, of course, you can do it online, as Alan is pointing out, immediately. But there comes a point where it's kind of hard to figure out. If you have a policy in the newsroom that penalizes people for making mistakes, you may inadvertently be failing to make accurate corrections that you need to be making.
But still, we have to make them.
Yeah, absolutely. Still have to make them.
I understand that problem.
So anyway, what is interesting is that...
And of course, I'm sorry. And of course, if you're an editor, Galen and Rex, and one of your people makes an error, you're not a happy person.
Yeah, no, there were files kept. I remember the days. There's a file on how many errors each reporter had.
Oh.
There were, and we talk about it at the college newspaper as well. In fact, this week there was a correction published on A2 of the Chronicle, the student newspaper. I'm proud of my students for doing that. That's what they should mm-hmm. do. That's mm-hmm. what they should do.
Absolutely. Anyway, there was no correction made by NBC. The other story that they had reported, not only the effing moron, it was that the president had said, what had kind of led to that comment apparently was that the president had said in a meeting that he wanted a tenfold increase in the U.S. nuclear arsenal. The president says, pure fiction made up to demean. So NBC has not corrected that. NBC believes that it is an accurate story. Frequently, of course, people don't remember what they've said. It's not unusual. This, even if you have somebody who has a reputation for accuracy, which Donald Trump has never had throughout his public life, long before he went into politics, even people with reputations for accuracy don't always remember what they've said and have to be reminded of it by tapes or by contemporaneous accounts from people who were there. But in this case, there's no indication that the NBC story was incorrect in either case, and yet the president is upset about it enough that he wants to now see if we shouldn't abrogate the First Amendment and perhaps challenge the broadcast license of a media outlet.
And one of the reasons, Rex and Caitlin, is that you have the Secretary of Defense and others obviously not happy, and you have a senior Republican Senator, Corker, head of the Foreign Relations Committee, saying this guy is going to lead us into World War III. Well, when you say that, and then you hear about multifold new nuclear weapons, the narrative comes together.
Exactly. And that's why the media reported the fact that they understood that the president had made references to the fact that he was going to increase the nuclear arsenal. Exactly for the reason that that is newsworthy. And if that had happened, the news has an obligation to share that with the citizens. This is what our president is talking about.
This is news. This is important stuff, and it's vital for us to have it. And that's why we have to have the First Amendment, and that's why it's so significant when the president of the United States seeks to undermine it. So, you know, there are a lot of things going on. The president is upending world trade in his approach to NAFTA. He is upending the health care laws, perhaps denying tens of millions of people health care coverage. There are all kinds of issues that are afoot in Washington, but I would say that nothing is more important than freedom of speech in this country. And if that is being challenged by our president, we're in more serious trouble than we might even imagine. So from one person who emerged in the celebrity culture of the 90s to another, Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah. Which pairs nicely with the president, doesn't the subject?
Well, you know.
They're both of the same ilk, it seems.
And not only that, it's political in a way, because Harvey Weinstein has given incredible amounts of money to Democratic candidates. And of course, there are those who are saying on the Republican side, aha, you see, you cover one way, but you don't cover the same thing. You cover Roger Ailes, but then you know, you're not there. Saturday Night Live isn't there to cover Harvey Weinstein in the same way. And you find all of these Democratic politicians appalled. They never knew of such a thing when it was a sort of an open secret in Hollywood that this was going on. And everybody is on top of themselves. Not the least of which is the New York Times, who has been assiduous in their prosecution of this particular story.
Yes, the story came out really through the New York Times and then the New Yorker. And these are significant media outlets. It is interesting that the Hollywood media didn't come out with it, the people who were supposedly covering the industry.
And the Times did speak with someone, I think, from the Hollywood Reporter and asked, why didn't you have this story? And the reporter said, well, I had looked into this, but I was unable to confirm. Whereas the Times kept moving and kept moving forward and did confirm, and not unlike the lawsuits against Bill O'Reilly, unearthed these lawsuits and the settlements. And that was, to some degree, what enabled them to publish the story.
Now, so here's an interesting question. To what extent do you think it is possible that the fact that the Harvey Weinstein story emerges now has something to do with a change in the tenor of society? We've had Roger Ailes, we've had and all of the other Fox News sexual harassment allegations and settlements. We've had Bill Cosby. Do you think that that has anything to do with the fact that Weinstein now finally is exposed?
I think it's absolutely changed since the first story came out last week. The numbers of women who have come forward, especially high-profile women, to say that they had been exposed to what Weinstein had been up to all along, harassing women. I think women are feeling emboldened and not as fearful of speaking out, because speaking out hurts their reputations. They are afraid it would hurt their reputation and put them into a category of person where they don't want to be. But through no fault of their own, they may have ended up in that category. And so women are now banding together, it seems, and with one singular voice, decrying the behaviors of men that are hurting them in various ways.
What is interesting here, this is not, by the way, we're not being prudish here. We're not talking about somebody engaging in consensual sex. This is a man of great power and wealth. There are even allegations of rape here, not merely sexual harassment. I shouldn't say merely sexual harassment, but this is very serious, even criminal stuff. But the fact is, the man was so powerful in Hollywood that everyone was willing to turn a blind eye, or at least not totally pursue the rumors and try to see how much more they could find out. There was one former New York Times reporter who alleged that the Times turned its eye away from this a decade ago. There was a strong pushback from the Times on that. Sharon Waxman is the name of the reporter. She subsequently went off and founded a site in Hollywood. The person who was then the culture editor of the Times pushed back and said, if she had had the story, we would have published it. I should point out that editor, the former culture editor, John Landman, a guy who's an old friend of mine, is the guy who exposed Jason Blair. He's no shrinking violet. He's not a guy who's going to be afraid to publish a tough
and
story.
For our listeners, Jason Blair was a serial liar who, with whole cloth, manufactured many, many stories to the point that the Times had to run a front page correction that went into the broadsheet twice. And they pulled ads to correct the record on Blair.
Right.
So Ian Rutenberg at the New York Times spoke of the fact that perhaps some of the media was complicit in letting Weinstein proceed the way he had proceeded, in part because they expected some favors from Weinstein, consultancies on some of his films, favors working with his empire, which he was, in a sense, a king of an empire. And people were, it appears, fearful to cross him. But at some point, there was a revelation that this is happening and we're going to pursue this story, and they stuck with it. And kudos to the Times, kudos to the New Yorker. Ronan Farrow, Mia Farrow's son,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
also
and,
ended
and
up.
Woody Allen's, may I add.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a question about that, but
yes, it's true.
There's an argument that he could be Frank Sinatra's son, from what I read in the last 24 hours.
Oh, have you ever looked at the man? Let's talk about blue eyes.
But anyway, so he was working on the story, and when I believe it was NBC that didn't press the green light to go with the story,
yes.
he brought that to the New Yorker.
Correct.
I believe that's where I read this week.
He works for both. That's
yes.
right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And he had the more, to me, salacious evidence that, in fact, Weinstein was assaulting people, not just harassing. And again, like Rex said, just is not the word, because any harassment makes it an uncomfortable place for a woman in the workplace.
A little embarrassing for NBC, of course, not to go forward with the story. You know, this is NBC who, there are questions about the news standards of NBC these days. You know, one question you might raise is what they've done with Megyn Kelly. That's a relevant issue that people are talking about these days. They signed this woman to a humongous, I don't remember the number, multi-million dollar contract.
$23 million, I think. Woo-hoo. It was.
Pretty
yes.
impressive. And then they give her this daytime program, Megyn Kelly Today, a third, an extra hour of the Today Show, and it turns into just kind of a softball show, not at all what we had kind of expected of Megyn Kelly, a local product, we might add, Bethlehem High School and Albany Law School here in upstate New York. And she has been, for everything else you might say about her, a fierce on-air presence who seems to have been defanged by NBC. Is that fair to say?
Well, when you look at the video clips of her programs talking about high-waisted pants and cooking chicken, that is a different posture than she had taken when she was engaging with Anthony Weiner, or you name the politician with whom she was
Trump.
Verbally fisticuffing. Oh, yeah, Trump would be one, too. I try not to say that word.
You're going to spell it out the way Alan does that tabloid in New York, right?
P-O-S-T.
So, in deference to Megyn Kelly, because I appreciate Rex noting that she is a local product, I try to avoid the name calling of anyone because I wouldn't want it done to me. But it is a different position to see her not doing the sort of more substantive reporting. But that is perhaps her choice. And if that is the route she chooses and she's still making $23 million.
It's very difficult for women in broadcast, I think. I think of Katie Couric, who took over the legendary CBS Evening News. And Katie Couric, I remember during the first Gulf War, was a tough reporter at the Pentagon. She was the second tier reporter at the Pentagon and emerged really during that time as a national presence. And it's difficult because frequently they're asked, on Fox News, Megyn Kelly was asked to wear short skirts and cross her legs under the glass top table.
Yeah.
But at the same time, here we are questioning, why isn't she allowed to be tough? What is going on here?
Right. And I don't know what the decision making was, but we do know that there are women who are continuing to be tough. I'm thinking of Chris Jansing from NBC, MSNBC,
mm-hmm. Yep.
who was recently in our market for the Women's Press Club. I saw Rex there. It was a nice event. A number of women journalists in our market were recognized. And Chris, I've seen her work. I saw her more when she was Chris Capistacci in our market. But she continues to ask tough questions and to forge forward again with trying to uphold the standards of journalism. So I don't know what happened with Megyn Kelly.
We don't really know. But if a program goes into the middle of the morning and the geniuses, the demographic geniuses are sitting there and saying, well, that's not a time for hard news. That's a time for soft news. Well, of course, they're wrong because people won't turn off CNN or MSNBC at this stage of the game. But look, these executives make bad decisions all the time. And the Megyn Kellys of the world have to live with them.
Yep, yep, true. Let's just turn for a moment before our program ends to a very local matter. The Gloversville Leader-Herald. Gloversville is a small city in upstate New York with a small newspaper that reported in a three-part series last week that the Ku Klux Klan was active in its community. It quoted alleged KKK members as saying there were 200 members in the county, said let them speak about saying we're really good Christian people trying to do the right thing, and allow these guys to speak with fake names, to keep their names concealed. It's an astonishing thing. And there was no effort to corroborate the allegation, the claim that there were 200 KKKers. This, you understand, is why people get upset, I think, with the local press or with the national press when they feel as though standards have not been met. Any thoughts on this?
Well, I know that the Albany Times Union, you know, that your newspaper, a very substantial and important newspaper, would not have done what the Gloversville Herald is being accused of. And I recognize that nobody would be in a better position to point all of that out than the editor of the Albany Times Union.
Well, but I feel bad about this because small newspapers are imperiled, and I don't like to see a community attacking its newspaper. That said, you have to maintain standards even in very small rural media outlets.
And these individuals who were allegedly interviewed and given fake names made some salacious comments, and I would have to agree with Rex that it should have been corroborated, and it seemed like there was a lax attention to detail on the part of the reporting that went on. I don't know this reporter, but if he in fact tried to corroborate evidence and was unable to, that wasn't clear in the stories. That wasn't revealed that he had tried to check and see if the claims these individuals were making were true. But sharing false names is problematic from the beginning. And if we're giving sources fake names, that speaks to what are their intentions if they're actual people, and why is the reporter protecting them?
Notwithstanding that, freedom of the press gives them the right to say that and the right of citizens to object and to complain and to stand up. That's where this program began and where we'll have to leave it. Alan Shartok, Kalen Brown, and Rex Smith, we thank you for joining us this week on The Media Project.
They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. But publishers have worried.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Kalen Brown is the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.